Welcome to Write, Publish, Repeat, Season 1, Episode 1. Yes, all the other episodes were just practice. This is where it all begins. And we are starting with the very basics of how to write. So whether you are new to writing or you've been writing a while and you just need some tips, we're starting from the very beginning. Stay tuned.
Write, publish, repeat. It echoes through the air. A chorus for creators. A call to those who dare. With cookies as his compass and a pen that won't retreat, he journeys through the pages. Write, publish, repeat.
Hello and welcome to Write, Publish, Repeat, the brand new, totally focused Write, Publish, Repeat, Season 1, Episode 1. We're talking how to become a writer. And this first episode is for the newbies. This is for people that have always wanted to write, or maybe they woke up today and said, hey, I want to be a writer, da-da-da-da, on YouTube, and they found us. So today we're talking about how you become a writer, the very, you know, basic steps. This episode is for you if you're a noob. This is me, David Wright. That's Sean Platt over there.
Hello.
Yes. So, do we want to open up with something cool first, or we want to waste everyone's time before we get into the...
Yeah, always. Always with the wasting time. I think that is the trademark of our show.
You could take this time to go get a drink, go get a meal, because we're going to be here a little while.
My mini something cool for today is this show, actually, because this is kind of an episode one of a 9-episode thing that we've planned out, which is the most planned out we've ever been in this
it's
show.
The most planned I've ever been in my entire life.
I believe that.
Even my wedding, I didn't know the day. My wife's like, be here Friday. And I was like, Friday? Okay, I'll be there.
I don't have a hard time believing that. So I'm really, really happy to be here today. I don't feel like, well, we had in our author velocity that we recorded yesterday, I showed Dave my Aura Ring stress level before getting on a call with him.
That's my something cool.
It's illuminating. So, no, my mini something cool is definitely being here. I don't know what episode number this is, but it feels a little bit like episode one. So, yay.
It is episode one.
In fact, we actually saw, it was an email that we were forwarded. Someone screenshotted something that said their first valuable episode was last week. So we're like actually a little bit ahead from being so behind.
We set the bar very low, so it should be easy to like maintain at least that level.
At least maintain. Yeah, that makes me feel great.
We're not going to set it any higher.
But my real something cool for today is I highly, highly recommend it to anyone listening to this because I've got to believe that you love the creative process. And I also have to believe that you like to laugh, that you're not allergic to
funny. I hate laughing.
Because if you were allergic to funny, I can't imagine you tolerating our nonsense for more than a minute. So knowing
unless
those
you hate watching us.
Oh, there are definitely
never underestimate the hate watcher.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I do remember when you used to waste people's bandwidth by hate watching their commercials. Oh man, why are you late on your deadline again? Watching Frank Kern videos. All right, I don't know. Is Frank Kern even relevant in 2025? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't keep track with that space anymore.
All right. You don't read the Salty Droid? Does the Salty Droid exist anymore?
I don't think so. I looked like 6 months ago or something. I think it was gone.
That doesn't vanished. Surprise me at all. Okay, no, my real something cool, knowing what I know about you, which is you're not allergic to funny and you enjoy learning about the creative process. There is a docuseries on Peacock. I think it's called Beyond SNL or Beyond 50 or something. Yes. It doesn't matter. You can search it.
I know about it.
Okay, it is fantastic. And I just finished it yesterday and I really, really, really loved it. And normally in this kind of thing where it's like IP about IP, it's basically fan service. It's like what you got with the Friends special recently.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, here's some fan service stuff for you. And this wasn't like that at all. It's a piece of art all on its own. And it wasn't like 1 4-hour documentary just chopped up into four pieces. It's four lovingly crafted documentaries. And
lovingly crafted.
Yes. Wow. Each episode is its own thing. Dude, Peacock didn't pay me anything. I just really enjoyed it. And, you know,
it's an artisan episode crafted by our very own hand.
It's really good. So the first episode is called the 5 minutes. And it's about, you know, that's what you get. When they scout you and you get to perform, you get 5 minutes to prove it or not. And the whole episode is about that 5 minutes and different people's 5 minutes.
I would fail so hard at that.
The second episode, well, there's some people who have failed and gone on to great careers, you know, but they had their 5 minutes and it didn't work out. And then the second episode is a full-on documentary about the cowbell sketch.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, which sounds like... is there that much material? But there is, because not only is that sketch very interesting, it also reveals the whole process. And it also, you know, really the theme of that documentary is the larger cultural impact of SNL, right? But they just home in on one specific example. The third episode takes you through a full week in the writer's room, which the biggest revelation for me, I did not know this, and I think it's just fascinating, is that I knew that they had a lot of writers and that they pared down 40 or so sketches to between 8 and 12. Like, mm-hmm. Wow, right? But if your sketch is chosen, you take it to the finish line. You work with the prop department and the costumes, and like you are basically, that's your sketch, which is really cool. And then the final episode or little documentary is about the weird year, which is SNL season 11, where Lorne Michaels had been gone for 5 years and then he came back. And it was like terrible. Like I didn't. I was too young. But it had like Robert Downey Jr. and Anthony
Charles Rocket.
Yeah, it was not.
I remember that year.
And then the finale was like them burning the whole thing down. Like it was dark and funny. And anyway, I can't say enough awesome things about it. I have been enjoying SNL lately. I went after the documentary was over, and we like looked for SNL collections, but none of them made us laugh like we wanted to. So anyway, maybe watch it with someone you love. Watch the four or Dave in alone, or watch it with your prisoners, your captives. You know,
I watch it with my son. He actually, he enjoys Saturday Night Live, but like me, he enjoys about 50% of it. And then, you know, it's always been a weird show. Like usually in the later half, you'll get the worst sketches or you'll get this gem buried at the very end. You're like, why do they only give that one like 60 seconds?
Well, but the thing is, I actually had this whole conversation with my mom yesterday, so we'll keep it quick. But I think that 50%, like I may laugh at something that's totally different than what you laugh at.
You're right.
And so someone
like,
else.
I like Sarah Sherman. She's so fucking bizarre. And like, I think it's a cultivated taste. So a lot of people are probably going like, what the hell is she doing?
I totally, totally agree. Like, I love how much she fucks with Colin Jost. It always makes me laugh. But like Keenan, like, I can't, I just like, no, like,
I didn't like him at first. Now I do. So.
Dude, he fucking smirks through every sketch. Like, do your job and don't laugh. You Jimmy Fallon part two. Anyway.
Oh, he is not him.
I just, no. But there's like sketches that it's almost like a movie in that your emotions coming into it have a lot to do with it. There's a couple of sketches that if I were to describe them, they wouldn't sound funny at all. But I remember sitting next to my daughter and laughing hysterically when they came on and us just laughing. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the Marzipan one, but I've seen
probably every episode.
We just like were dying laughing when that came on, and now every holiday, you know, we're sending each other texts that say marzipan. You know, so anyhow, that's my something cool. What's yours?
My something cool, I'm surprised it's not your something cool. Maybe I haven't seen it yet. The second season of Succession has started.
No, because I am waiting. Until
Dude. Don't you like the water cooler?
No, I don't. I like to go deep. And what I want to do is I want to rewatch season one. I think season one is worth a rewatch before.
Yeah. Like I watched a video, recapping, because you need it for this. Like they have so many layered little.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What I want to do is I want to watch an episode a night, but time it so that I could just go you know, all the way through.
And then watch 10 hours in one day.
So no, I want one a night is perfect for that show.
Yeah.
So is season two living up?
Well, there's only been one episode so far, but yes, it's living up. And have you seen the trailers at all?
No, I don't. I'm going in dark. I want to go.
Oh my God. There is a new character. When you see that, and I won't spoil it, but when you see this character, you'll be like, what the fuck are they doing? It's perfect. It's so bizarre.
Excited. Yeah. Severance is my favorite show of the last few years. I think it is so A+ television. I just love it.
All right. Well, now that we got the bullshit out of the way, let's get down to the brass tacks of why you're here if you just woke up today and decided you want to be a writer. So,
what
Sean,
percentage of our audience for this episode do you think woke up today and decided they want to be a
100%.
Writer? 100%. Okay. I like your theory. Keep going.
I'm good at math. Okay. So let's start with the most cliche generic question that I feel like everybody asks writers. Where do you get your ideas?
Oh man, dude, I feel like I'm overqualified to answer this question. And
because you have stolen a box of ideas from elf.
It's a dick answer, but you know, we've talked about Strength Finders before. My number one out of the 34 rankings is literally ideas.
Mine's communication.
For me, yeah, I've heard. I really want Becca Syme to come on and like evaluate you live. I'm going to read her some of our texts and say, where do you think that Dave lines up here in communication? You are better than your wife, who I understand only texts hi.
Yeah. Well.
is that true? Okay. So ideas are easy for me because it actually, this sounds like I'm making a joke and it's actually not, but I want to say it was like 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, whenever Fiction Unboxed was, like right before that is when I started to realize for the first time, as we were talking about the tagline of that Kickstarter was, or it wasn't the tagline, but it was the kind of the point we were making is a lot of writers spend time looking for ideas instead of making ideas great. And I didn't really realize how many creatives were like really starving for ideas. They're like looking for good ideas. And once they have an idea, they know what to do with it. A really great example is 90 in our own studio. She, like, you give her an idea and she will like run all the way to the mountains and back with it. Like, she's amazing. But like, it's not like every day she has a new idea, right? So there are some people in the studio who like, they're always dropping ideas into our collective garden. And for me, I did actually a 2-year streak of a new idea every day. So that's pretty easy for me just because it's how my brain works. Now, having said that, I think it's very teachable. And the thing you have to do is look for the ideas and recognize that anything is an idea. So when I'm watching, I get a lot of ideas while I'm watching TV.
That show I just watched would make a good show.
Well,
Control C, Control V.
Yes, but no, it's really the intersection between two things, right? So if you're watching, I mean, it could be random. It could be reality television, but somebody says something or something.
Real Housewives of the Rodeo Circuit.
Somebody does something like Real House. Okay, let's go with that. It's like you're watching Real Housewives, and what if it's like Real Housewives of the Galactic Federation or like some sort of a parody, Real Housewives of the Oregon Trail, right? And like there are things that you can do, and maybe that's not the right idea, but
A great idea. We got
Real House. Okay, I got dibs on Real Housewives of the Oregon Trail, but I actually don't want dibs. If you want to, you totally take it. But Real Housewives of the Oregon Trail might not be the right idea. But maybe you're thinking, you know what? Like a story about the Oregon Trail from a woman's perspective who is, you know, raising her teenage daughter. Actually, that's 1883, right? But which you still haven't seen. You need to see that if you're interested in Real Housewives of the Oregon Trail. So
obviously, I am the target demo.
I think that you can find ideas everywhere, but it's really like, should I put some chocolate in this peanut butter, you know, be willing to mix things that don't necessarily mix naturally until they're there. You know, that's what kind of me and Johnny built our entire career on early on, you know, was like Unicorn Western, like let's Downton Abbey with robots. You know, we really took that far because I think that new ideas can just come from an old collision of ideas.
You know, people talk about that chocolate and peanut butter not combining, but I think it's a very natural combination. I remember when I was a kid, the commercials introducing, you got your chocolate and my peanut butter. Like, why is this even a thing? Like, why do you have to teach people that this is a thing? Now, my weird idea of something that doesn't sound good, but I think it would be great, but I haven't done it yet, grape jelly and vanilla ice cream. I feel like that would be great, but I've never seen it. I've never seen grape ice cream. I've heard it exists, but I've never seen it.
If why don't you just get some grape jelly and some vanilla ice cream? It seems like that's
whenever I think to do it. Like, I don't have either near me. So anyway,
well, it seems like of all the problems in your life to solve, that is some really low hanging fruit.
I will forget this the minute we end the show.
Okay,
until I am, you know. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, it does make me feel better that you don't just forget the shit.
I forget everything. I am Dory.
All right.
So, okay. So you have an idea. You've made it something that doesn't suck. How do you turn that into a story?
Well, okay. So a story, I think, on a primitive level, is just a series of things that happen. But I think... and anything can be a story, right? I went to the store and I bought milk.
If I go to the store, it's a story.
Yes. So I go in the store and got milk is technically a story, but it's the worst story anyone's ever told. And it's not because it's short, right? The most infamous story, short story of all time is Ernest Hemingway's 6-word gem, Baby Shoes for Sale, Never Worn. That's an amazing short story, right?
My son and I were watching, I think, Drew Gooden or Danny Gonzalez, one of the two, and they were looking at Craigslist ads, and they had, like, baby furniture, like, all of it, never used. And he didn't note it. He didn't think about, like, neither my son nor Drew or Danny, whoever it was, they're both the same guy, didn't think about the ramifications of what that means. But I was horrified. Like, oh, God, that kid died. And my son's like, what?
And you were like giddy like this.
Yes! It must have been Christmas.
What is wrong with you?
No, I was not giddy, you monster. Jesus.
Why are you giddy telling me about it now?
I don't know. I'm just excited to be doing such an on-topic episode.
Okay, great. So back to the topic. Where were we? Help me.
We're going to edit half this episode out.
Yeah. So where were we? Help me.
What do we do with the idea? How do we turn it into a story?
Oh, right. So going to the store to get milk or whatever is really boring. But what if there was traffic? Okay. That's a little more exciting. What if there was traffic, so you started on your phone, or the main character started looking at their phone and then rear-ended the person in front of them? Okay, great. Now we have some conflict, right? Okay, now what if you weren't going to get milk, you were going to get, like, bandages because someone just got in an accident. You're going to go get them something, and now there's a ticking clock. And then what if the person that you rear-ended is all of a sudden, like, a really violent, road-ragey type person? Okay, now, within 2 minutes of leaving the house, you've got all kinds of conflict. What if he does follow you? And that's great. Dave's really good at making stuff worse, right?
Oh, yeah. So, I thought of like 10 things immediately when you said two people hit each other. Like, what if you're hitting each other, but you're with your mistress? And she's on the accident report and your wife finds out. Like, uh-oh.
Yes, that's the opening scene for a thriller right there. Okay. So, you know.
Always keep your mistress in the trunk.
Another gem for this episode. Thank you. So I think that that's a good example of just conflict. Conflict makes a story, character arcs, resolutions. So you have the thing that happens, which is important. But then
I like to begin with a what if, and then you add conflict.
Yes. What if plus conflict is a great formula. And here's the thing. There's so many formulas out there. Don't get lost in looking for the right formula. Get lost in telling your stories and tell them better and better and better. So, you know, how do you learn to tell a story? You tell a lot of stories and don't overthink it. A lot of people a lot of writers, a lot of great writers even, at this point, they sit at the keyboard and they try to be all writerly instead of just having a conversation with the page and just telling the story like you would tell it to a close friend who got you, who sees you, you know? So if you tell the right story over and over and over, you just become natural at the rhythms of telling a story. And there are so many formulas. Here's how you structure a story, and you do need to know some basic structure. But I think that just learning to be comfortable in your own voice is so essential to the actual process.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there, like my brother-in-law, detective, he tells great stories. He doesn't write stories, but he's really good at like remembering shit and just crafting a story. I bet if he tried to write a story, he'd be really good with a little bit of help.
That kind of person makes a great collaborator with a ghostwriter. Because they don't have the confidence to get the words on the page, but they actually have the ability if they just allowed themselves. Someone I'm working with right now, same. Like their ideation is really good, and we just delivered a draft. And even though this person could never write that draft on their own, they could easily identify, oh, what if we did this and this and this? So they're like an active participant in this book happening. And it's really cool, you know.
So I'm wondering, and we didn't rehearse this ahead of time, although it might seem like we did.
We ever rehearsed anything ahead of time?
Well, what you said made me think, like, I wonder if anybody that's ever gotten a ghostwriter or collaborated with a ghostwriter ever went on to become, you know, an author themselves, like if they learned in the process.
Yeah, I think you absolutely can. I think this person in particular will. I think for sure.
Because I think there's different clients. Like I feel like a lot of people have like one story they want to tell and they hire a ghostwriter. But how many people actually want to be a writer, hire a ghostwriter to start that?
I think there's career. A spectrum. So another client that we're working with right now very much specifically wants to be a writer. And so they're giving us ideas and they're an active participant through shaping. We actually have someone else who's basically hired us to build franchises, but they want to be able to take the franchises over. So it's like, and a lot of the work is actually working with them so they understand the process along so they can repeat it later. Where we have somebody else, I mean, you worked on a book earlier this year where that client never wants to be a writer, but I could see them loving having this book so much that they came back and got another one. But it's just different. You just have to know your why. It's like anything else. But yes, I do feel like if you're working with a high quality ghostwriter who will take the time to teach you, and that's really not a ghostwriter's job, but if you have someone and they're part of the process, this is so sideways, so let's get back to the subject in just a second. But if you were to hire a ghostwriter, then you'd probably get more out of it if you wrote like a sloppy draft yourself and actually hired a developmental editor rather than a ghostwriter, or a ghostwriter to completely rewrite it and give you notes as to why. However, I think that would be too expensive to have it rewritten. I think getting the notes and then you rewriting it yourself is actually the way to fast track your learning there.
So what would you suggest for somebody that they don't want to hire a ghostwriter, they can't afford it or whatever, or they do want to be a writer and they don't ever want to, you know, shortcut that or whatever? How would they go about starting the writing process from scratch? How would they know if they're any good? Like, should they start with short stories? Should they just go with the book they have in their head?
Yeah, I love short stories because it forces you to tell a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and needs to keep the reader interested. And you can also play with a lot of different genres and dialogue and just characters. You could do so much without having to get the whole 80,000 words worth of story in there. There's a fantastic Ray Bradbury quote where he says, I highly recommend, I'm butchering the quote, but he's like, I highly recommend that if you're wanting to learn to write, you write a short story every week for a year, because nobody's going to write 50 short stories that are bad in a row. And there is a lot of,
I think
of
that's
truth
from
that.
The Zen.
It is from the Zen of Writing. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite books. And
yeah.
He talks a lot about ideas in that book too.
Yeah. It's, I think writing is work. I think that there's this, you know, romantic notion that it's just, it's not. And for me, a lot of the work is in the revision. Like, writing is rewriting. Don't expect, you know, your first draft to be magical, especially if you're just starting. You know, you're gonna have more rewriting than anything else, but you can't be afraid of the work and then think that you're going to do stuff that's extraordinary. The literal two parts of the word extraordinary are extra and then ordinary. So you can't just be ordinary. You can't just think, I'm going to get this out in my first draft.
I just had an idea, and I imagine someone must have done this before, but I think a good exercise would be find a writer who writes like the kind of stuff you'd like to write. Have somebody else read the first chapter, tell you what happened, and then have you write it, and then compare it to that writer to see how you did it, how they did it, and kind of compare and contrast.
Yeah, I think getting feedback is so important, because sometimes we think our stuff is better than it is, and sometimes we think it's worse than it is. And again,
I've simultaneously done both.
I think we all have. I think it's really easy to not have perspective. You're lost in the story. So, for example, and this is an example of the benefit of writing short stories and kind of illustrating what we're talking about right now in the feedback. So you just posted a short story yesterday to the YouTube channel that will run, I think, next month. And you Slacked me about it. You're like, this was really great. There was definitely surprise in the Slack that I read. Like, this one was really great. Because,
well, you know, the real surprise of it, I mean, not only how good it was, but we're using AI to do the voiceovers for the stories, because I'm not going to read all those because it would suck, really. I'm not a voice artist. And it costs a lot. So we want to do it and, you know, keep costs down until we know, you know, that it works well. So I'm listening to this story being told by an AI voice, and it's so well done. And I don't usually like fiction read by a person. And the story was well done, and the word choice was well done. It was very evocative, cinematic, and the ending was perfect. So I was just surprised altogether. The whole package came together for me.
Well, I loved that. Like, I woke up to that message, and I was all happy.
A rare good message from Dave.
It. it was great. I loved that. But here's the funny thing. I wrote that last year when I was writing one short story per week, right? So I don't have like a real memory of writing it. Like, it was just writing, and that's great. You want that muscle memory. And in my head, that was an okay story. Like, it's not one that...
I think you're in the zone for that story.
What was outstanding. So anyway, I think that writing short stories, you know, over and over, and like, I don't remember specifically, but I've got to say that Catherine Cottom, who is my co-author on Plot 147, which comes out next month, she had to have some hand in that, because she was like editing a lot of my shorts, you know, last year, and actually all the shorts for Sterling and Stone. So like, that critical feedback is really important. Like, I am a great writer, but I never get to the finish line on my own, ever. Like, it doesn't matter what I'm writing. Either Catherine's helping me or Bonnie's helping me. Someone is helping me to go from good to great, just like I try to help, you know, all of our other writers go from good to great, right? So you do need somebody. Now, if you don't have enough money to hire a ghostwriter or a developmental editor, and, you know, you don't know other writers, you don't know other creatives, I'm glad that you brought up AI first in this conversation, because I always feel like it is still a bit of a minefield. But AI is really good at evaluating your work if you are articulate about what you want evaluated. So, and you're clear that you don't want flattery. AI will flatter you. Like, it just will. Oh, that's amazing. Like, shut up, Hal.
Pipe down.
Yeah. What you want to say are things like, I'm looking for harsh criticism. And it's not like, if I ask you for harsh criticism, that would really be opening myself up.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
But
let me get the knives.
But, you know, Claude, for example, is so already, you know, poised to give you glowing feedback that if you ask for harsh criticism, you're going to get something moderate. So, hey, look, I'm not looking for flattery. I really want an honest and strong critique of this work. and ask for specifics. What are five things I can do better to make this chapter? And even more specific, or improve this chapter, even more specific, what are five things that I could do to improve this character or improve this dialogue? And if you really pay attention to what it's saying, you have a writing coach. You know, that just, is that equal to a human writing coach? Well, no, but is it accessible to like pretty much everybody right now? Yes. Yes, it is. So I think that you should start where you are and have goals to get where you want to go. And that's true really for anything. So if it's just learning how to tell a better story, you start from nothing. I went to the store to get milk, but then this happened.
What would make this interesting? Now for people, I know someone's going to ask in the comments, like, what the hell is Claude or Cloud or however you say AI program? That's not a free one, is it?
It has a free version. Oh. And I think the paid one is $20 a month. The difference is you can't use all the models and your limits. You hit your limits pretty fast. So
now we're not saying AI writes good stories. We don't use AI to write stories.
No, it is generative if it's giving you an answer, but you don't need to use AI to write your prose to write better prose with AI, right? So if you can say, how do I make this better? And then you implement those changes, I think that's phenomenal. Like there's this thing, it's individualized tutoring. So I was really happy a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or whenever it was, Cindy and I saw the news that the first district in Arizona, or maybe it was Arizona as a state, was putting in like individualized AI tutoring into the classrooms. And Arizona is always like a progressive state when it comes to education. And when Cindy was doing, you know, curriculum across the country, she always thought highly of what Arizona did. Like they were the first to just kind of figure things out. And so we were like, yay, that's awesome. All right. And then like, I don't know.
Now we're firing 80 teachers.
It wasn't even it's about the teachers could do a better job now because
I was waiting for the other shoe to drop in this story.
No, instead of teaching 30, you know, children all the same exact thing, it's like, okay, you have individualized, and now the teacher gets to curate the information in the classroom. Like, oh my God, that's so much more effective. So a week later, we read another story about Nigeria and how they had put, you know, they basically did the same thing, but they did it earlier, and they already have results. They're getting an average of the same results that has taken two years historically, they're getting in 6 weeks.
Wow.
And that makes perfect sense because you can individualize the learning. And like, I'm a very different learner than you, right? And you're a very different learner than that dude over there. Like, we're all really...
You saw him.
We're all really unique in the way that we, you know, absorb information. And I think it's time to acknowledge that the world has decisively changed. You know, when we were first doing this, when you and I first met 16 years ago, I was very much in the mode that I had grown up with my entire life, which is just-in-case learning. You know, you learn everything. Mm-hmm. And just in case you need it later. Okay, well, I'm going to have WordPress. I need to learn how to use WordPress. Like I just learned how to do everything that I didn't know how to do before. And I stopped doing that a few years ago and really transitioned to just-in-time learning. I learned the thing that I need to learn at the time that I'm going to learn it to go make the thing that I want to make. And the skills that are essential to who I am and how I think stick around, and I put more time and attention into those. And the other things, I'm like, oh, that's not something I'm ever going to be great at, so that's something I should outsource, or that's something that I don't really need to know, but I need to have someone on the team who does. And it's, I think that just-in-time learning, it's a way of individualizing, but if you can get good AI tutors that are teaching you something at an accelerated pace and you know what questions to ask, I think it's a great use of AI.
Okay. On as to the learning thing other than AI, what sorts of things do you think people should read or watch to just become better writers? Now, the old adage, like, if you don't read, you're not going to write well. I think that holds true if you don't read anything. I think you need a diet of information and style and story to enrich your life and experience.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I would say it's a little simpler than most people make it. So I think a lot of people, they, you know, like we talked about earlier, they're looking for the right formula or the right book about structure or the right productivity hack. You know, like, I get it. Writers love their formulas. Like,
we got one coming up at the end of the show.
Yeah. Like, I totally get it. And there is space for that. It is part of the process. But I feel strongly that a lot of would-be creators would be creating a lot more if they didn't focus so much on that and focused on the doing and the observing. So you're saying, like, what kinds of things should you read or watch? I think read or watch what you normally would, but first of all, don't be shy about it, right? Like, I watch a lot of TV. And it's like TV is one of my hobbies, but it's also work. You know, I love what I'm watching, but I'm also watching it as an observer more often than not. You know, like, I can't help it. I'm building my muscle memory. So I don't think it's about what you watch. I think it's about how you watch or what you read. It's how you read. And I noticed right after I started writing for the first time, you know, 16 years ago, I started reading differently. I started watching TV differently. Oh, that's how they're doing that. And a much more recent example is, you know, like, ha ha ha, Dave loves to make fun of me about this, but I really do. I love writing songs. I love writing lyrics. And now that there's AI that can put music behind it for you, like, it's my new thing that I love. It's my hobby. However, within that hobby, I have now listened to music differently. I've started to listen. Like, I can't help it. Now that I'm trying to find walls of sound to go with, you know, stanzas of words that I've written, I'm paying a lot more attention. And it's not like I didn't pay attention before, right? Like, I love lyrics. And if you're listening to this, you probably know how much I, like, froth over Eminem's ability to wordsmith. But lately, yesterday was my birthday, and we did a lot of driving around town, basically feeding ourselves around Austin. And we were listening to the new Kendrick album, and we listened to it, I think, three times. And it, just exceptional lyricism and musicality. And I would have picked up on that lyricism and musicality a month ago, 3 months ago, whenever, like, before I started, you know, dicking around with writing songs. But the way I heard it yesterday was different. It just was. And I think that if you're creating things, pay attention to how other things are created.
I feel also paying attention to real life. Like, when I was young, I used to take a bus to work, and I was on there a good 45 minutes or so each way. And I had a lot of time to observe people. And I would do this little thing where I would just look at somebody, and I would actually write in my little journal that I had, or notebook, I would write what I thought their life was like. I'd build character sketches.
Do you still have any of those journals?
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, definitely. But this is something that I've done forever and just naturally paid attention. And today, I was dropping my son off at school, and we were sitting and waiting until they opened the doors because it's super cold out. And he was talking about a teacher there that he likes, and he hadn't told me about him before. So I'm just looking at this guy, and I start, like, saying, I bet he does this, is this. I bet he had this thing happen to him in life. I was spot on. My son was staring at me like, what are you, psychic? I'm like, no, I just observe. And it was really cool that I was able to, like, kind of share that with him, like impress him with something that I use for storytelling. Like,
yeah, that's a good story.
So, yeah, pay attention to everything. Use it in your use it as your diet to kind of enrich your stories. How do you know if your story's good? Like, it's probably not going to be when you start, unless you're, like, this rare butterfly or something.
No, I think that that's actually easy. I think a lot of people, when they start writing especially, are focused on, and to be clear, this is exactly where I was. When I started writing, I only cared about how it sounded, how the words sounded, how it read on the page. Will people read this and think, he is a good writer?
He's smart. He knows big words.
And it was really about, is there wordplay? You know, I think, like, the very first compliment you ever gave me, I still do remember.
You have it framed somewhere.
Well, it was, I just really love the way you can turn a phrase, is what you said. And so that was the kind of thing that I know I'm good at that. And so that's, of course, what I focused on. And you should focus on maybe the things that you aren't so good at, right? So no, absolutely focus on the things that you're good at. But in addition to that, think of the whole spectrum. There's a lot of stuff in the middle you could probably ignore for now. Focus on the thing you're really good at and focus on the thing that needs the most work, right? And for most people starting out, the thing that needs the most work is to put the writer or the reader first, because they're making it about them. I was making it about me. How great does my writing sound so that you can compliment my writing? Like, that's what it's about. The reader did not show up for the quality of your writing. They show up for your story. Now, once you prove that you're a great storyteller, the quality of writing really does matter, but you're not going to get somebody on beautiful writing if the story's not there. Like, they're going to check out. It's like movies that look fantastic, but you don't feel emotionally invested. Is my story good? I think a better question is, does my story make someone feel or think? Because if your story isn't making them feel or think or leaving them with any emotion, then there's really no point to it. It's just an exercise in words on the page. So I think that getting real people to read your story and tell you if it's like, if it's legitimately affecting, I think that's the question to ask.
Okay, here's one that, I see this a lot, and I never really give it much thought myself, but maybe you do. You're more intentional. What is theme in a story, and how much thought do you give it when you're crafting, the outline?
Totally depends on the story. So if I'm just writing something that is more like escapist, okay, so Yesterday's Gone has a lot of themes, right? It has a theme of light and darkness, which is, like in pretty much everything you write, is, the constant struggle between light and dark in the universe and in each of us individually. So that is very consistent. It's an overarching theme in a lot of our stuff, but it's really, it's core to the Yesterday's Gone theory or series. But we never once had a conversation about theme.
No.
Right. That is something that, like, you're not going to be able, if you're writing from an honest place, you're not going to be able to escape the themes that are important to you. So, for example, in anything that I didn't write, like with another collaborator or that was just like, if I'm writing my own thing, or actually anything probably that I've written with Bonnie, because Bonnie likes this core theme. And so it's very easy for her to play ball with me. But like, I've written a lot of genre, right? But that's actually not what I'm best at, and it's not what is most native to me. It's because when we started, it was like, hey, let's tell a serial. And then I was doing crazy genre stuff with Johnny. But left to my own, just my own devices, I'm engineered to write something called power dramas, which is basically Succession is a power drama. And it's people who are like, My biggest trope is people who are lying to themselves, telling themselves a certain story, and then life has to fuck them up so hard that by the end of the story, they have to tell themselves the true story, and then therefore they're a better person. Okay. Does that sound familiar to you?
A little bit.
Okay. That's
sounds like the theme of your life.
Yes. That's who I am as a person. Growing up. And so like personal accountability and just like telling yourself an honest story is really important to me. So of course it shows up in my fiction. So I think that theme is best when it's natural to who you are and you're not trying to say, hey, here's the theme that I need to like shove into this story, right? Just write about the story and the natural themes will crystallize. And once you know what they are, you can do things to intentionally sharpen them. But yes, I am an intentional writer, but I don't start with theme. I let theme emerge. And then once I'm aware of it, like I do try to punctuate. But
in this series, we're going to have other episodes where we'll focus on things like plot and character. And I think that conversation will probably be revisited at that point. Okay, here's the big question. How rich are we going to get writing?
Well, that is a great question.
This is from the POV of somebody just tuning in for the first time. And like, I want to be a writer and I want to be rich and I want to be rich tomorrow.
Yeah. So thinking that you're going to be a rich writer is borderline delusional. Thinking you can be a successful writer, meaning successful, I would say that whatever your current income is, unless it's obnoxious, if you're like Matthew McConaughey listening to this right now.
I heard he woke up today. He's like, I don't want to write a story.
Is that your Matthew McConaughey?
That's my worst impression ever.
Do you want to hear a really good, very short Matthew McConaughey impersonation?
Please do.
Joke? Well, it's not an impersonation. So I do live in Austin, and he lives in Austin. So somebody who was like 5 years ago or something, and they had just moved to Austin. And they were an international person who had moved here, and they put their kid in a private school. And they hear behind them what this person described to me as the worst Matthew McConaughey impersonation he had ever heard. And he turned around, and it was actually Matthew McConaughey. So it reminds me of like Timothée Chalamet didn't win the Timothée Chalamet lookalike contest a couple months ago. So I think that you can't, unless you... If you have just a regular job, I think that you can replace that income. So even if you're a doctor, like you're smart, you went to school, you know, you probably have some student loans to pay off and you have to worry about those too. But I think in general, whatever drove you to the career that you have, you can use that same energy to transfer your life over to being a writer. That's way different than being rich. Can you build a sustainable income as a writer? Absolutely. People do it all the time. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Is it hard? Yes. Yes, it is hard. And what I would suggest is if you don't love writing, don't try to replace your income. You have to write. You have to. Yes, there's a lot of work, but there's also a lot of passion and a lot of love. If you don't love what you are doing, it's not sustainable, right? So it's there's way easier ways to make money, and you're probably not going to get rich. But if you would write for free anyway, then it makes sense to try to build little systems over time that will get you paid more and more and more for the time that you spend writing so that eventually you can replace it. So again, I'm going to bring into the music example because that's the one thing that I'm doing right now creatively that like, could it make money someday? Sure. Theoretically. Will it? Probably not. Right. I'm doing it because it feeds me. I'm doing it because I feel creative when I'm doing it and I like the results that I'm getting. And so I want to keep doing that. If you're not feeling that with the work that you're creating, don't attach money to it. Like it's that simple because already, you know, it's like Daniel Pink. Have you ever read that book Drive?
Yes.
So, you know, the thing about the kindergartners doing art and they just do it. They just love drawing. And then they're like, okay, you could pick a prize from the prize box when you're done with your drawing. All of a sudden, half the kids don't want to do it anymore unless they get a prize, right? It changes the mechanics of your relationship with art. So I would say be careful. Like maybe it's just enough to write on the weekends and love your short story that you want a month. Like you don't need to do more than that. But if you do want to do more than that and you do want to make it a career, just know that it's going to take years and it's not easy.
It's good that you have, if you have another job or you have somebody that, you know, also brings in money to the household, I feel like if you don't have a stress attached to the writing, it's a lot easier. You don't have to worry. It's about as many things like, will this book sell? I need it to fucking sell. Like all these.
If you need your next book to sell, that's a hard place to be in because you just can't control the market and it's constantly changing. And unless you have an ad budget, you know, to start, it's just going to take a while.
And I do think writers, they would always write. Like I've written ever since I was a kid. I've always wanted to be a writer no matter what I'm doing, no matter what job I had other than writing. And most of my life, I was not a writer technically, but I was writing all the time. So I do feel that that's important. And I do want to end this, you know, wrap it up so we can keep it short and succinct. So we're going to talk the next 8 more episodes in this season, and we're going to talk about more writing. We're going to talk about publishing. We're going to talk about repeating. We're going to talk about stuff like Kickstarter. Anything else that you remember that we're going to cover that you wanted to talk about?
No, but I just feel happy right now. I feel like this was a good show. I like that you teased what's coming. I like that we know what's coming. I feel happy. I'm excited about
the bar low, man. I don't want season two to like, woo.
The next episode will be with Bonnie, and we're actually recording that later this afternoon. And I'm excited about that one too, because I mean, I'll tell Bonnie stories when Bonnie's here, but yeah, she's the best. So
now I'm going to leave you with one thing. If you struggle, the thing I struggle with most was getting into flow, and even until like as recently as, you know, last year, struggle with getting into flow, struggled with finding the time to write, sitting down to write, and just fucking doing it. Sean developed a course, 10 days to flow, absolutely free, and we're giving it away on authorvelocity.com. So go there, and if you struggle with flow, and you probably do if you're just starting, go there, sign up absolutely free, and it's going to help you. It will change your game completely.
Okay, what I love most about that CTA was how clearly pleased you with yourself you were at the beginning. You were like, I'm doing a good job right now, and you did. That was awesome. Awesome, awesome. I give this show an A. Very good.
An A, A. Oh, I like E for effort, but okay, I'll take an A. All right, well, thank you for listening. And again, next week, we'll be back with Bonnie, who is absolutely phenomenal and really changed our game with writing. So
see you then. Thank you. Adios.
Shadows of the Sunshine State, redacted is his home. Lives a man named David Wright, who pens the great unknown. Diet Coke runs through his veins, a decoy wallet keeps him rich. Paranoia fuels his pen, and creativity's his niche. Write, publish, repeat.